Hello there, and welcome to the Talking Heads podcast with me, Lucy Chamberlain.
And me, Saul Walker.
We're two head gardeners looking after private estates in Essex and Devon. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. We hope your garden is growing beautifully. And if you're new, thank you for listening in to us chat about our gardens, what's going on in the horticultural world, and occasionally chatting to our garden friends around the UK.
Finally, summer has arrived, and after one of the most unusual springs in living memory, and the steady reopening of the UK COVID lockdown, it couldn't have come any sooner. Herbaceous beds are overflowing with colour, kitchen gardens reveal their bounty of fruit and vegetables, and the air is filled with buzzing and birdsong.
Join us every week for a new episode on a range of diverse subjects as we reflect on our successes and failures in our work and personal gardens. We also look at how horticulture in the UK is developing, and divulge a few things that we've learned over a combined 40-year gardening career.
So take us with you as you start weeding and planting, or just enjoy us on your favourite garden bench as we delve into the busy and exciting world of the modern head gardener. Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Talking Heads. Good evening, Lucy. How are you?
Hello, Saul. I'm all right. I'm a little bit glowy. I think that's the term we use to describe it when we've got moisture in places that, you know, it's all over, in all honesty. So, hang on.
I wonder where that conversation was going. If you're wondering what Lucy is talking about, we are recording this probably in the middle of one of the hottest heat waves, especially in the southwest. I've got to say, I've just looked at my temperature. It is 10 o'clock at night, or we're just reaching 10 o'clock, and it is 27 degrees in my house, which is unheard of. And I know, because I've talked to a few people on Twitter who live in Australia and Florida and some places, that is a very low winter temperature for them. And they would be in jumpers by this point. So what are we moaning about? But for us British people, This is warm, and we're suffering.
Well, and we've both got a touch of red in us all, haven't we? In our colouring, in our hair colouring.
That's true.
So, as you say, lily white skin.
It doesn't help. It doesn't help.
Goes from lily white to beetroot red in a very short space of time. And it's just the closeness. It is just very, what I call foisty, you know? It really is, isn't it? So
It's not a week for gardening, I can tell you that.
No, it's not. But there are thunderstorms forecast, which actually could be quite pleasant. I know you mentioned a while ago that you actually quite like a thunderstorm. So do I.
I say
there's something about the energy and the electricity of a thunderstorm that's actually quite brilliant. So I would love there to be a thunderstorm for a multitude of reasons, but specifically at the moment, just to break this very close atmosphere. So come on, thunder and lightning.
It's going to be nice, especially when that temperature dips a little bit and I'm just going to stand there in my...
in your all together.
I was going to say,
your boots.
Absorbing the rain. That's a great image for everyone. And before we move on to tonight's topic, I also just want to say a big thank you for covering me for last week. I know
I wasn't on the podcast,
but I'm very busy. As we're relaxing, I wouldn't say we're relaxing that much because there are still some problems with the COVID in this country, but we are relaxing our restrictions. I am getting booked left, right and centre, hilt, sword and tip, as they say, to go and show my face, mostly on Zoom, but I think things are going on. And it was nice to hear about your tomatoes, though. And I know that was an episode that was, you know, you had in you.
Yeah, I did. It didn't. Yeah, exactly. It was like open the lids. I could have gone on for about 2 hours rather than half an hour. But it was my pleasure to talk about tomatoes. And I'm glad that this week is not quite so frenetic for you.
Yeah, I'm glad as well. I've got actually a weekend to spend in my own garden and it needs it. Even if there's thunderstorms, I will be out there repotting.
Well, I'm going to a field in Suffolk, so I won't be anywhere near my garden this weekend. So coming to a field in Suffolk near you.
well, I'm sure we'll hear about that in next week's podcast. Anyway, on to tonight, and we're going to bring you the Hampton Court episode. I'm sure everyone has listened to episode 100, the mega episode that came out a few weeks ago, and they knew we'd gone to Hampton Court, but we didn't really let on exactly what we saw at Hampton, and we want to do that tonight. We want to have a little reflection on the gardens, a few of the people we saw, and just let you know our thoughts on what we felt on what was probably the biggest show for a good 2 years.
Well, we should talk about show gardens in themselves because obviously Hampton Court for you and I was one of the first major RHS shows that we've been to together for, well, I think we said 2 years. But yeah. Show gardens in themselves are a totally different concept to the estate gardens that you and I look after, because they are of the moment.
Yeah.
You know, they are constructed to look good for the week or the duration of the show. Plants are placed very, very carefully so they can look, and they're meant to look inspirational. That's the whole point to them. They are very highly designed. The landscape has to be absolutely on point, looking brilliant, the landscaping work that's carried out. So in a sense, they're more of an inspiration than a, I mean, they definitely are achievable gardens as well. But I think we all have to remember when we're looking at these show gardens that, for example, if a specimen tree's gone in and it's not looking quite right in the angle that it's in, you can twist it around and position it so it's looking splendid from the viewpoints you want it to be viewed from. That doesn't happen in a garden that you and I look after. We just have to make do with what we've got and make the best of it. So, show gardens in themselves are an interesting concept because there's a lot of weight put on them, and rightly so. You know, the designs are splendid, but how achievable are they, would you say, Saul?
Well, I think one of the words you just used there was concept. There is an element of conceptualness to them. Because having an insight into these things, being the ex-show manager, I know how they apply for the show gardens, and they have to come up with a brief, which is basically either a description of the theme of the garden or the feeling of the garden or what the garden's meant to represent. And in essence, that is the concept that they work with. So unlike our gardens, it's so hard to say that show gardens are not real gardens, because they are at the end of the day. There's design principles, there's planting, there's texture, there's rhythm, there's all kinds of things there that you would use in another garden. But in another way, you would never really take them and use them as gardens, because they are in their own separate bubble. They're there to represent something at the show, the concept. And the other thing you've got to remember about show gardens is that they also represent a very small epoch in time, a very small envelope, whereas our gardens represent a whole year's worth of, well, gardening or work or plants or whatever it is meant to be. So although you can take ideas from show gardens and put them into your own gardens, the actual overall thing is probably not as feasible. So you have to, when you're looking at them, and this is what we're going to talk about as we go through this episode, we're going to look at a few of the show gardens. When you're looking at them, you're not really looking at the garden as a whole as you might at your or my place, where you are looking at a big picture. You're actually looking at small little details and small sort of framed views, like you've already said, to actually understand what the designer's trying to do or trying to say, rather than trying to read too much into the bigger picture of the show garden. I hope that makes sense. It's quite hard to explain.
Well, listening to that, I was also sort of mindful that actually the designers are probably under maybe more pressure, because they have the capacity to choose from a palette of plants and position them and make sure those plants are, because they're obviously individually potted and then moved in, those plants have got to be to an incredibly high standard that wouldn't be achievable in a year-round garden. Then there is a much greater pressure for the gardens to look absolutely perfect. And I think that's maybe what we just need to take away, is that that perfection in a year-round garden, maybe if you're trying to put your hopes on it looking like that continually, that's not going to be really achievable. But from, as you say, a concept, an idea, a style, a planting, a palette of colours, the design principles and the forms and flow that you see in front of you, then yeah, absolutely, that can be all taken away and applied to your own garden.
So let's go back to Hampton Court and listen to us visiting the first garden we saw on site, which was by one of the big name designers who was designing the RHS Iconic Horticultural Hero Garden.
So we have been directed to this garden as one of the best on the showground, and it's the first one we've visited, so we can't judge at the moment, but it does look absolutely beautiful. It's designed by Tom Stuart Smith.
It's the Iconic Horticultural Hero Garden, which apparently is what Tom Stuart Smith is this year. I think it's a new title that the RHS are giving out to notable horticulturists, I guess, and maybe one day you and me might Do you think we could design a garden like this? I'm not sure.
If mine was an edible garden, I could do something with it, I think, yeah. But
I think it'd be edibles one end and a few bananas and gingers down the other, and that would sum up nicely. So we're standing in the middle of what is almost meadow-like in its quality, but it's a load of herbaceous perennials with dotted shrubs, and they're all meant to be drought-resistant or Mediterranean-type plants.
Do you know what I like about this? Because I'm very familiar with the gravel garden at Hyde Hall, which is a lovely place to visit in itself, but this actually is... There's height all the way you look through this garden. You've got the perovskia and hyssop, and there's cardoons and grasses. And normally with gravel gardens, you get lots of low hummocky plants. And here, most of the plants sit at waist to eye height,
yeah,
which actually
true.
I really
yeah.
like. It's very secretive, isn't it?
You know, there's lots you can't of see the whole thing in one go. Yeah. You have to walk through it. It's got what I would call...
Hogging,
compressed hogging paths going through. So it's quite naturalistic and soft. Yeah. In its composition, but we're very lucky today. Actually, I should have said that yesterday was the most horrendous weather here, rained like nothing, and today is nice and dry. So it suits this kind of this garden looks best in sunshine. I think we're going to have a little wander through and see what it's like.
Let's do that. That Tom Stewart Smith garden was just a delight to be in. It made me feel, Ansel, feel so uplifted. It was a beautiful space and it just tapped into a lovely feeling of contentment and tranquility. And then you completely flipped on its head was another garden at Hampton Court. This was one of the Global Impact Gardens and it left us feeling slightly different. So I'll just leave it at that and you can hear what our thoughts were.
Right, we've wandered onto the other side of the Long Water because that's where most of the gardens are situated, and we've just been arrested, or my view has been arrested, by a plane has looked like it's crash landed in the middle of the Hampton Court site.
Mm.
And it's a garden here by Felicity O'Rourke Designs called Extinction. And it's a bit unusual.
It's stopped us in our tracks, and it's not your usual show garden, and as in it's not meant to be.
No,
it's meant to
absolutely.
Be something that shocks people and makes them stop and think, and it definitely has done that. It's about the impact of us humans on the planet, and we're looking at a field of wheat, which I guess is implying that there's a monoculture where humans tread, as opposed to lovely diversity in flowers. There's not a flower in sight at the moment. Big pile of rocks with half a plane on the top. And in big red letters, Homo sapiens slapped on the side. So it really is a statement garden. And I'm feeling all stirred up.
It's definitely, it's not a garden. Well, I don't know. There's always this debate of whether what is a garden and what isn't a garden. It's definitely a statement piece to emphasise a point. It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because we've just been in the Tom Stewart Smith garden. And it couldn't be any more different, could it, really, in some ways?
Yeah. I think this is why you go into gardening, so that we don't then, you and I would never create in our impact on the globe anything like this, I'd like to think. It's making me feel a bit sad looking at it, which is the whole point, I think, of the garden. So it's definitely one on impact.
Yeah, it's going to stir the emotions. So if you do come to Hampton Court, take a look and see how you feel, I guess.
That was, quite a garden to view, and it's definitely not one for the purist gardener. Or the one looking for flowers. But if you would like a plane put in your garden, that's the garden for you, I guess. But what was interesting about that garden is that it was very conceptual, and it's going back to what I said in the intro about the concept of gardens. That's part of the planning process in show gardens, in that they do come up with these briefs and try to match it. And I have to say that Hampton Court used to have a lot of these weird and wonderful gardens. When I was the show manager back in 2012, 2013, there was a category called the conceptual gardens, which were very, very out there and usually based on a feeling or some sort of radical abstract concept, something. And it used to bring out some very interesting garden designs. I know it brought a lot of controversy on the show site. Lots of people saying they didn't really like it. I've heard some reviews saying they didn't really get it as a garden. But I think as a piece of theatre, as a concept, it was quite good. And Hampton Court has played up to this in the past. That garden got a silver award, which probably represented some of the rougher areas in the design. But a lot of the gardens got some golds and some silver gilts. And one of the perennial questions I know a lot of us get asked, especially if you've done judging, is how are the gardens judged? And I know, Lucy, you wanted to say a few words on that.
So I just wanted to give you an insight into how they are judged, because both Saul and I have got some experience in judging show gardens. We both will go to BWC Gardeners World Live later this year and be judging Floral Marquis exhibits there. And both Saul and I have judged show gardens in the past. And it's quite an interesting process. You really do have to be very scrutinising in your mindset. It can feel quite harsh doing so, but that is the process that we've been asked to do. And if you are a budding garden designer and you're wanting to maybe try your first show garden, there are things that you must adhere to. There's strict criteria. And it's heartbreaking when you do have to mark people down. And I've had to do this before, where, for example, some of the most simple things are not met. So, for example, if the brief is to provide a design drawing, I have been at a show where one of the designers did not provide a drawing, and it was heartbreaking because it was a lovely show garden, but they lost 20 points because we couldn't judge them on that at all. And that category was a major category, and they just fell down. And again, for example, things like if there's a brief for your garden, and then when you actually stand and look at the garden and judge it, it does not meet the brief. Again, you get marked down on that. And it's a shame. So as I say, if you are a designer and you're in your first few attempts at trying to get good medals, good levels of work at these shows, fundamental things like that, honestly, they make a massive difference to what medal you can expect. So do just look at all the fine print and make sure you're ticking all those boxes. They are essential, and we do have to judge on those.
So we took everything that Lucy was just saying there, did a little informal judging of ourselves on probably the category that represents mostly what we expect to find in our back gardens. That is the lifestyle gardens. And we took a real liking to the People's Choice Award and the Best in Category Lifestyle Garden. So we've made our way to another section of the show gardens, which is the lifestyle gardens, which are less about the message and more about, well, the aesthetics. It's more about contemporary city living. Now, you can probably hear a band in the background and things are getting a bit more busy because the preview evening has started.
Yeah.
But we're going to carry on looking at the gardens. We're going to preview them. And we've looked around the four gardens.
Yes.
And we've been judging. We've done a little informal judging, and I think we've reached the conclusion. We've reached the Talking Heads Gold Lifestyle Garden, haven't we?
Well, I really like this one that we're standing in front of now. This is called A Place to Meet Again. It's been designed by Mike Long, and it's very calming and gentle and subtle, and I love that about it. There's lots of hard landscaping going on. It's sort of like the classic garden design style here. You've got a sunken area, you've got timber, you've got slate, you've got the multi-stem birch, you've got a pergola with trachylospermum on it. But I just like the way it's very subtle and soothing. I think sometimes gardens, it's not just the way they look, it's the way they make you feel when you stand there looking at them. And this one makes me feel very nice and chilled. Love it.
I think if you're a younger member of the Hampton Court crowd...
Are you kind of saying I'm young?
Lucy, keep talking. This is your kind of guy. Look how you would... Gin and tonic in the corner. How good would you look in that, eh?
Well, you know, not bad.
I think it's very contemporary. And you know, the use of the hard landscaping and then softening by the planting, it's a very well designed garden, and it is designed by someone who's a member of the Association of Professional Landscapers, which is probably the premium industry group for landscapers. And it's done, you know, the construction is very tight,
it's gorgeous, isn't it? I like the texture of the I'm guessing they're slate blocks, aren't they, and they've been put in kind of,
yes,
they've been deliberately made not to be smooth.
Yeah.
They've got a lovely texture to them.
Yeah.
And the colours are literally green, white, and so I reckon you were subconsciously drawn to this garden because it's got one of your favourite plants in here. There's some hydrangea. We've got hydrangea Annabelle, I'm guessing they were the big mop heads either side
very,
of the water feature.
Very pretty plant.
And then the hydrangea paniculata of some style as well.
Very architectural, aren't they? Both actually add a bit of interest. And it's interesting how they've interwoven sort of
older plants, or what people would consider a little bit old-fashioned, with the newer stuff, the newer grasses,
yeah,
to make a very tranquil, this is a tranquil
that is
garden.
It. That is it. Mike Long's A Place to Meet Again was one of those gardens that just reached out to myself and Saul and had a resonance with us. It just looked and felt very comfortable and somewhere you'd like to be, somewhere you'd like to step into. I mean, it's always so tempting with these show gardens. You just like to sit down on the seat or the chaise longue or the whatever it is they've got there that you would normally be sitting in and just indulge yourself. And it really did tempt me to do that.
And talking about that being an APL garden, an Association of Professional Landscapers, we did meet with one of the past chairmen of that association, Mark Gregory. Now, most people will know Mark from the Yorkshire gardens that he has successfully created at the Chelsea Flower Show. But he is one of the perennial faces at all the RHS shows because his company Landform is probably one of the biggest landscapers behind many of the most famous Chelsea, Hampton, Tatton, all the show gardens. And Mark had a few things to say about this year's Hampton Court.
Well, we've just bumped into Mark Gregory, who many people know from the Welcome to Yorkshire Garden at Chelsea. Gold medal, People's Choice Award winner and all that. And we're here at Hampton. Now, I know you haven't got any gardens you're doing here, yeah, Mark, but what's your feelings about the show? Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I have, actually. I mean, only here. I only came on Saturday to do the kind of pre-judging and then judging. But actually, I really like it. I think it's there's a lot of content. Some really, really good stuff. I love the big exhibits that have people like Tom Stewart Smith, these big walkthrough, and the Jamie Butterworth, the Telegraph stuff. It's some fantastic stuff. Gardens, you know, there's not a huge amount of garden, but it doesn't feel content light. It feels what is here is good. There's a lot of take home, a lot of community stuff, which is really good. So, I just commend. These are really difficult times, and to actually commit to the cost and for the RHS to do it and say we're going to do it and delivering it, I think it's fair play to them. You know, I don't think anybody would come expecting it to be the normal year, because it isn't. But it's certainly, there's tons to see. And I love Hampton Courts. It's great.
And your company, Landform, obviously do a lot of private and, you know, the installation, proper garden installations. But you also do a lot of the shows as well. And it must be nice to get the show calendar back going for your guys and maybe for you as well.
Well, it is. I have to say, having missed Chelsea this year, so second year, I've kind of enjoyed not being there. I shouldn't say that. Nobody's listening, are they? But actually, now that I'm here, I realise how much I missed the interaction, the judging process, the debate, the kind of conversations. I really have. So now I'm up for Chelsea in September. Yeah, and I think actually, you know, I've just missed, like everybody, just missed seeing people.
Yeah.
And seeing all our, you know, the horticultural industry is a very supportive, very friendly industry.
Yeah.
And it's just lovely to see people, all your friends.
Yeah, it's definitely more than just building gardens. It's building friendships and all kinds of things.
It's a lifestyle business as well. That's just great. I just built so many friends. The show thing is a big part of our work calendar. Mm. I mean, this year will see me 100 gardens at Chelsea, I think up to about 170 gardens for the RHS.
Wow.
And we used to do an awful lot at Hampton Court. I mean, one year, I think in 2000, I did 6 gardens here.
Yeah.
Like, we're big. It was just like boom, boom, boom. But I'm kind of getting older and a bit wiser, so I'm not doing as many. But no, I love it. And, you know, it's good to see a lot of young designers here. You know, it's good to see people like Tom Stewart Smith putting his name to and the money to get a big name like that. And that's a kind of masterclass in how to do a planting walkthrough garden. Mm. It's just fantastic to have that quality, but also the younger stuff coming in, younger people coming through. So now it's just, it's great. Now, hopefully, the weather's going to be good for the public as well.
You know me, I'm a lady who loves my edibles. And another area that I was naturally drawn to was the RHS allotments area, which this year had so many individual little designs and plots on it. It just looked fantastic and sung out to my heart. You'll probably tell in this little clip here where Saul and I stumble across it. Saul, this is more like it for me.
This is your thing, isn't it?
This is the RHS allotments zone of the flower show, and I'm looking at things that are familiar. Beautiful salads, nasturtiums, brassicas, pea sticks, all sorts of loveliness. Things that you can eat. I feel quite at home here.
I'd say there's a bit of your back garden. in this part of Hampton. This is a brand new section, I believe, or it wasn't around when I was doing the Hampton Court Flower Show, and it's quite nice because I think it's more based on the sort of community feel, allotment groups and like local societies or residential groups coming together and putting together really nice edible plots in all sorts of fashions. Yeah, it's really nice, isn't it?
It is. We need to go and have a little look around. I can see lots of gaggles of children, and that makes me happy because I think children, if they're introduced to grow your own right from an early age, that is the secret. So we'll try not to tread on any as we walk around, but let's go and have an explore.
And talking about children, Lucy was like a child in a sweet shop in among all those edible exhibits. But there was one large garden there, the RHS No Dig Allotment Demonstration Garden, that was built and designed by the champions of No Dig in this country, Charles Dowding and Stephanie Hafferty, along with a good friend of mine and Lucy's, Terry Porter, who grows some of the most amazing show vegetables and will probably be at Gardeners World Live with us, putting on another fantastic display. We did have a good interview with both Charles and Stephanie coming up, and we're going to showcase that in a forthcoming episode when we talk a bit more about No Dig Gardening. As well as that, we also met up with Kate Bradbury, who many of you will know is a wildlife gardener. You've probably seen her on Gardeners World or on the radio. And we also have a good interview with her coming up on a wildlife episode we're going to be doing very soon. Talking of wildlife garden, that feeds into a big theme of this year's show, which was all about sustainability and looking after the environment. And probably one of the gardens that was probably one of my personal favourites sort of exemplifies that with its use of materials for the garden that were all recycled.
You know, if you think, I've got an old container here and I've got a bit of stone here in my garden, then maybe I can do something with it. Well, actually, designed by Amanda Grimes, the Punk Rockery is just that. It's been created out of things that you can easily get hold of, such as, I'm looking at a dustbin lid, I'm looking at a broken planter, I'm looking at some terracotta tubes on a bit of palleting. But you know, that verbal description, you'd be thinking, well, it looks like someone's allotment maybe, but actually it looks very, very nice.
It's interesting, isn't it? I didn't think punk and rock gardens would go together, but actually now you think about it, what's more punk rock than a rock garden? In some ways.
Exactly.
You wonder if Johnny Rotten, that's what his back garden looks like. But it's really great actually, because you're right, every garden has a load of stuff in the background just building in a corner, rocks and odd bits of rubbish, to turn it into a garden. And this is what this garden is. They've completely taken everything and it's DIY'd. Like, yeah. The rocks are all crushed bricks and different bits of concrete.
You've got lumps of concrete. Yeah. It's like rubble. Rubble, concrete, and then interplanted with lovely, lovely plantings. We've got verbascum, we've got some steepa, we've got lichnis chalcedonica, is it?
And yeah, laryngium. The most punk rock of plants, the laryngium.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly. Oh, and we've got some parakeets flying overhead. Wouldn't be the same at Hampton Court without the parakeets.
More punk rock. No, I really like this garden. It's sort of, because again, we've just been to Tom Stuart Smith's, which is obviously heavily planted, but there's the feeling, a very similar feeling here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. There's hummocks and then there's spires. And it's just amazing what you can do with something that maybe you think you'd be discarding. What I loved about that punk rockery garden is that it had mass appeal because it taps into something that we're all so mindful of these days, which is upcycling, recycling, whatever you want to label it as. But it's basically making sure we don't keep wasting stuff, which I think a lot of us really approve of now. And it's something that is very on trend at the moment, and long may that continue. Talking about something that's been on trend and long may it continue, I mean, this is a plant that's been on trend for eons and eons. Roses. We had a episode of the Talking Heads podcast on roses, and it was a really popular one. We got some lovely comments about it. And at Hampton Court Garden Festival, there is the amazing Rose Marquee. Now, we reference in this recording that we smelt it before we saw it. We did. It was a lovely warm day. The perfume is just so heady. And you'll find out in this recording why Saul and I could not resist using our olfactory senses. Can you just sniff?
Oh.
Sniff the air, because it smells deliciously sweet. We have walked into the rose marquee, and the scent. I mean, we could smell it before we saw it, to be honest. The smell is amazing. And obviously the sight is pretty special too. We'll do our best to try and describe it.
Yeah, good luck. The colours and the forms are amazing. Hampton Court obviously always falls at the perfect time for roses, so it's very famous for its Festival of Roses tent, which is also probably one of the smartest tents as well, if you like the architecture of tents.
I like the bamboo and I like the awning style. It's beautiful, isn't it,
actually? It is very nice. It's a lovely setting. And yeah, as Lucy has already alluded to...
Come on, let's walk over. I can't stand here anymore. I need to go and shove my nose in the rose.
Look at them. They are... And obviously, these are the rose-growing supremo. So we're just at Peter Beale's roses. And
Peter's beckoned us over.
Wow.
His roses have. They look... delicious.
Now we've been told to look at nostalgia, which is right in front
what?
Of us.
Can I lean over?
Yeah, lucky. Yeah, let me hold your microphone and we can get a sniffing sound.
Oh,
look at that. High quality sound effects on the Talking Heads podcast.
Is absolutely.
It is a
scrumptious.
Absolute.
Yeah, that was a top tip by a gardening friend, and they've definitely nailed it with the smell on that one.
And, and the look as well. It's quite an unusual one because it's two-tone, but most of the accent colour, which is pinkish red, is on the tips of the petals. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a bee. Look, there's a bee in one.
There
so
is.
They know where it's good.
They know a good place to be. There's also lovely archways, which I really would like to walk underneath.
Should we head in that direction?
Come on, let's do it. We're just about to go under the arch. And oh, my lord, if ever you want to be inspired to climb, train a rambling rose over an archway. Oh, I'm just looking up, and the colours and the fullness of the petals. We've got a variety of proper ramblers. Mini Ha Ha is one I'm looking at. There's also Chevy Chase.
I think when you come to these displays of the people who really know what they're doing, we've got Peter Beale's this side, we've got Friar's Roses over there. And there's obviously others like David Austin, which is probably the most well-known of the rose breeders. You can just see that they really know their thing, don't they? How to get the maximum amount of flowering. Oh, here come the kids.
Oh, there's some very excited children, and I can't blame them. No, don't worry. It's lovely to hear it. The kids are loving the roses. We're loving the roses.
Some future rose growers among those, lot, I think.
I think the public will love the roses. It's, yeah, if you're coming to the show, make sure you do get yourself over here.
Well, that's a lovely way to end this episode, in the scent of the Rose Marquee. We didn't get to all the gardens, unfortunately. That's just the nature of the show, you know, trying to get around. One of the biggest problems we had at the show was that we kept bumping into people every 10 minutes. There was someone we hadn't seen for 2 years. And then you'd have a...
Well, it was lovely,
wasn't
it?
It was lovely, because you'd have 15 minutes chatting about how they were and how the pandemic's been and how they think the show's going. So that was nice, but it did sort of hamper us getting around the whole show and having a look
at everything. It did, but we did our best in the time when we were there, didn't we?
Yeah, so. And you know, it was lovely to be there. I've got to say that it was a long day. We got a bit tired towards the end.
Yeah,
but...
yeah, exactly. And just to add on, the show season is by no means finished.
Nope. Exactly.
You know, this is just Hampton Court Garden Festival we're talking about here. There's a plethora of local and larger shows going on near you. So get out there, get your critique hat on, stand and look at the show gardens, appreciate the work that's gone into them, because there's a massive amount of energy and time and funding that goes into these show gardens, especially this year. And just maybe take some ideas home with you, but thoroughly enjoy yourselves.
And that brings this week's episode to an end. We hope you enjoyed listening into our take on gardening in the 21st century. Please do let us know, either through a review with your podcast provider or direct to us on our Twitter feeds, at Gardening Saul and at Head Gardener LC. And also follow Lucy's Instagram page, also at Head Gardener LC.
As summer days lengthen, it offers more opportunities than ever to enjoy your garden, whether you're digging, hoeing and raking, or sipping on a summer drink with friends. Whatever the reason, enjoying your outdoor space and bringing a little bit of foliage and flower to your personal plot is one of life's real joys.
As head gardeners, summer is one of those periods where the garden brings the greatest satisfaction, as the planning and perspiration spent for most of the year manifests a cacophony of botanical eye candy. But there is still much work to do, so join us on a future episode to see exactly what Lucy and I are up to.
Until the next episode of Talking Heads,
goodbye!